In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Ronald Reagan said it best. The 11 most terrifying words in the English language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to destroy your forests." Okay, he didn't exactly put it that way, and while that's the outcome of their help, someone from the government wouldn't actually put it that way either, because that would be telling the truth, and we can't have that. But think about it, people from the East Coast who have no idea what a proper forest looks like and no idea of the sheer size of things out here in the West elect from amongst themselves representatives and senators who also have no idea what our forests are like. But simply by being elected to the federal government, they get to decide how lands out here are managed, or more precisely, mismanaged. And that's just the federal lands here in Oregon. It's just as bad when the state government appoints people to boards who have no practical knowledge of natural resources, but somehow get to decide what's best. But it's more than that. So much of what drives management of lands, whether state or federal, is driven by the religion of global warming. I call it a religion because it's not science. At best, it's math, output by a computer programmed by a garbage truck operator. But it's not science because it's not testable, and you're not allowed to question it. If you do, you're a heretic and you will be cast out, because questioning the science could lead to not funding the science. But the Earth is not warming. Did you know that the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which is the official government agency responsible for jimmying the numbers, did you know that they actually found that the last 8 years has seen global cooling at the rate of 0.11 degrees Celsius per decade? And all that despite more activity by mankind. Now, there's some irony. If we were to admit global warming wasn't real and stop funding this taxpayer boondoggle, just think. The environmentalists paid to study global warming might actually have to get a job in natural resources. You know, out there in the forests they claim to care so much about. Jennifer Hammaker is a sixth-generation Oregonian whose family has a long history in natural resources, including fishing and the timber industries, and she is the president of Oregon Natural Resource Industries, or ONRI, O-N-R-I, an organization dedicated to protect Oregon's natural resource industries and the people who work in them. Jennifer, it's great to talk to you again.
Thank you so much for helping us get the word out, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. So last time we had you on air, you were gearing up to go to the sisters meeting there on June 7th. It was a public meeting dealing with Oregon's habitat conservation plan, which would abandon 53% of Oregon's forests. And you and others were there to try to stop this from going forward. And we're going to come back around to that meeting in the next segment. But as a reminder, or for those who didn't hear that last show, talk to us about your organization, ONRI.
Well, ONRI stands for Oregon Natural Resource Industries, and we are a 501c6 nonprofit. Our mission is to protect, defend, and support natural resource jobs, families, communities, and businesses. And we have a dedicated volunteer board. Right currently now, we have 9 people on the board, and we have a farmer, we have log truck drivers, we have timber people, we have we're looking for a fishing person, somebody in the fishing industry, whether it's sports fishing or commercial. We need more information and insight into that area. But we are our aim is to protect and defend and support natural resources and their jobs and families. So this HCP that's looming down on us has been pretty much created behind closed doors during COVID. And the effects of it, the impacts of it, are going to be devastating, especially to rural communities and counties. So we're trying to buck the system. We're trying to tell them, slow down, knock it off. We can't do this. It's not right for Oregon. There's better ways to do this. And HCP deems critical habitat, it's modeled habitat, which we can get into later, But this habitat closes down forest management on huge swaths of land, hundreds and thousands of acres. And so we definitely don't want to do that. We know what happens when we don't manage our forests.
You know, when you guys were putting together ONRI, did you ever have the thought, why do we need to defend natural resources? I mean, the fact that natural resources are even under attack, I mean, that's something all of us should be supporting.
Oh, my God. Mark, you know, that is absolutely 100% true. So on my dad's side, it's commercial fishing. On my mom's side, it's lumber timber. And Oregon is natural resources.
Absolutely.
We're founded on natural resources. And so, yeah, I often ask myself, why? Why is this happening? How did we let this happen? And there's many reasons why it happened. But it's happening, and so we're fighting it.
Do you find that most people that are opposed to natural resource industries either simply have no understanding of what that is, or the fact that they don't understand that most natural resource industries are 100% sustainable and renewable? I mean, a farmer doesn't want to go out and destroy his own land. You don't want to overfish the oceans to the point where you don't have any to catch next year. To the people that are opposed to natural resources, do you find that they just don't have any understanding of what exactly it is that they're trying to attack?
Well, what always surprises me is that the people that are put on these boards and commissions that create policy are not boots on the ground people, and they don't ask for boots on the ground expertise and wisdom. We have many generational fishermen, farmers, ranchers, loggers, foresters. Do they call them in and ask them? No. They right now with ODF, with Oregon Department of Forestry, they have some chief foresters, which are great. We have a state forester. He's great. But they have a job, and they've been given a, you know, agenda. You need to put more conservation on our forest. So they need to meet that agenda. And, you know, in there lies a perpetual job security, because if they burn down our forest, there's going to have to be jobs to, you know, make sure that we're fighting those fires or, you know, saving our forest. They think that they consider their definition of forest fire is a disturbance.
Hmm.
So, and that's one of that in the HCP, they refer to forest fire as a disturbance. Well, that disturbance is going to kill the very species that the HCP is supposed to protect. So it doesn't make any sense to me. It's a self-licking ice cream cone. It just keeps going on in a circle. It's horrible. I don't get it. And yes, there's many people out there that are boots on the ground, whether it's farming, ranching, mining, timber, lumber, fishing, that would love to have some say.
I do know that Dr. Bob Zyback, who I know you know, and I know he's involved in ONRI, I know that he has said in 30-some years of being out in the forest, he has never once run into an environmentalist. They're too busy in downtown Portland coffee shops writing papers about the forest.
100%.
So, okay, let's go and take a break. Coming back, we're going to be talking to Jen about that June 7th meeting and the outcomes there. Stay with us. We are talking today with Jennifer Hammaker. She is the president of Oregon Natural Resource Industries, or ONRI, O-N-R-I. We're talking to her about Oregon's Disasters Habitat Conservation Plan. You can find out more about their organization by heading to onri.us. That's onri.us. So, Jen, you went to the Board of Forestry meeting back on June 7th in Sisters. What was that like and what happened?
Well, it started off in a coffee shop. The Sisters Coffee Company, my vice president and I, Jeff Levy, sitting down having a cup of coffee, and Jim Kelly walked in, and he is the chair of the Board of Forestry, and he recognized us right away, and reluctantly, he started to maneuver over towards us. So we stood up, and we shook his hand and said, good morning, we'll see you in there. And once we got in there, he laid out the ground rules, and slowly but surely, people started flooding in. There was no room in the parking lot.
Hmm.
This was at the Fifth Sisters Lodge, which is very beautiful, absolutely gorgeous, has creeks running through the entire area. There's condominiums and a pool and big room for to hold one of these events. And it's just gorgeous. But it was insane because, you know, Sisters in the summertime, there's traffic all the time.
Oh, yes.
Except early in the morning. Well, not this morning. This morning, it was bumper to bumper. People were trying to get into that parking lot to get parked. And we had about, I don't know, 70, 80 people show up that were in opposition of the HCP. And it was anybody from, you know, forest professionals, foresters, mill owners, loggers, people that were work out in the forest all the time, mill people. Oh my gosh, there were so many people there, sons of generational, you know, logging outfits and so forth. And then there was Henri, and six of us showed up, and we sat front and center, and the people, there was about five rows in front of us, and then it was split by an aisle, and then the rest of us. The five rows in front of us kind of held the people that were what you consider environmentalists. I don't consider them environmentalists. I consider them obstructionists. But we had one guy up there sitting there with a salmon hat. Well, not hat. It was a salmon mask, gigantic, huge salmon mask on his head. And he
could
was
have worn a clown mask.
I know. It was so weird. And then we had Millie the Marbled Merlette. And she had her nest and everything with her. And, we had Martin who's the, you know, coastal Martin. These animals are named on the HCP. They're under the Endangered Species Act. So they're named on the HCP. So that was just ridiculous. But the rest of us that showed up to oppose it, it was probably at least 10-1, in opposition of this. So it felt like finally we have support. Finally, we're making some headway. The testimony that was given was absolutely riveting. I cried more that day than I have in a long time. Mm. It was true stories of their own trials and tribulations, of their own special experiences and knowledge, wisdom. Their love is what came to the forefront of the forests of our state, of Oregonians, their love and true commitment to keeping our forests healthy.
Yeah, and you said it made you cry. What was the reaction of the Board of Forestry members?
You know, it was a mixed reaction, but I know that we got them. So can I talk about the testimony that Henri gave?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I was representing Henri. And we had tried real hard, and we succeeded in getting over 1,000 petitions opposing the HCP signed. We also, since June of 2022, had been working with county commissioners and boards of commissions that are going to be impacted by this HCP to get proclamations. So we wrote proclamations for the boards of the commission boards. In Clatsop, Tillamook, you know, Polk, Lane, all those different counties that are going to be impacted by this HCP, and they passed them through their board. So we first got up there and introduced ourselves, I did, and then I said, here are 800, here's 800 signed petitions, people that could not be here, but who opposed the HCP. I have 200 more on my phone that I haven't printed out, but that's 1,000 individuals that could have been here, that would have been here, but they can't, that oppose this HCP. And I had them bound, each petition bound. And so there's huge books, like telephone books, and I'm slamming them down on the desk in front of me, and it makes a pretty big impact. And then I said, and here is 8 counties that we that have signed proclamations against the HCP. These county commissioners represent hundreds of thousands of Oregonians who oppose the HCP. I hope you can hear that. And then I looked at each one of the board members in the eye. And then I stood up and we had this scroll that I had printed out, I think 50-something sheets of paper in 20 font that had all of the public services that will be losing critical funding if the HCP goes through. And so I started to unwind it, and I realized it was way too big for me to do. So I asked my VP, Jeff Levy, here, grab this end, and I started moving the other way, and he started moving the opposite way at me. And it was probably 50 feet long, and it kept unrolling and unrolling. And I just told them, I said, there's a better way. This is going to destroy communities. Stop the HCP. Hmm. And then I looked at them again, and I know that it got through to them. They were all making notes on this. To say that hundreds of thousands of people oppose this HCP, and to stand united amongst the county commissioners to say we don't want this in our counties is extremely important. And the reason why it's important is because those counties actually own that land. They gave authority 100 years ago to the state to manage those lands, but they still own those lands, and there's a contract between them. Mm. And so they to say that hundreds of thousands of people don't want the HCP, but also that these counties don't want this HCP speaks volumes.
Sure.
And so it was impactful. There was a couple other people on there, David Kunert from Hampton, that gave a speech. He was raised over there in Sisters, Oregon. He talked about the mills shutting down and what happened to his family. And now he's a forester so that he can protect the forests so that doesn't happen to anybody else's family. Mm. And it's just riveting, absolutely beautiful, because they're sincere, they're genuine, they're heartfelt. It was their own experiences. And I don't know, if you would listen to that, you would understand the depth of caring and yes. love and, you know, of our natural resources. Yeah. And it was beautiful.
You know, and I just continue to be astounded that more people don't understand this. I mean, for heaven's sakes, we live in Oregon. You are surrounded by natural resources. How are you not aware of how these things impact people? All right, let's go and take a break. Lots more to talk about at that June 7th meeting. We'll have more with Jennifer Hammaker, the president of ONRI, after this. If you're just joining us, Oregon has a new scheme to take more forests out of production under the guise of a habitat conservation plan that's going to take over 600,000 acres out of production, basically abandoning the forest. And we are talking with Jennifer Hammaker about Oregon's disastrous new plan to save the forest and save the habitat. But like so many leftist plans, it's just going to destroy rather than protect. And Jennifer, we were talking about that really important meeting that you had back on June 7th with the Board of Forestry, and you had mentioned Mr. Salmon there, but how many people were there in support of this HCP?
Probably 20 people there that supported the HCP. There was probably 80 people there that opposed the HCP.
Hmm. In terms of the people there that were there to support this HCP. I know that I had talked to you yesterday and you had mentioned that some of them had come from Canada.
Yeah, a group of them had come from Canada. We talked to a woman outside of the room on the pathway, and she had stopped us, and she was trying to convince us that we all want the same thing, to protect the forest. And she started talking to us about, you know, we need to have a hands-off approach on it. We need to make sure that our wildlife is, you know, protected, all this kind of stuff. And, well, so do we. We protect our natural resources. We protect our habitat. So we use the same words. It's just how we do it is different. And so we got into a lengthy conversation with her. It was about a 15-minute conversation. Mm. And in that conversation, she revealed to us that she was from Canada. And that she lives on a old homestead with no infrastructure. There's no toilet or electricity or anything, with a group of people. And those people had come down to Sisters, Oregon to support the HCP. And I said, well, how is this affecting you? And she says, oh, the forests affect us all. Mm. So this is important to us. What? What?
Well, maybe they ought to be putting out their forest fires that they've got going up there in Canada right now. But
exactly.
This is not unheard of. We were involved in fighting the Klamath Dam removal down there in Northern California and Southern Oregon. And this right. is this tactic of essentially getting people in from other areas that have no, that don't live there in the basin, that aren't impacted by the basin. That's typical of one of the many leftist tactics, is that they try to drum up support, make it look like there's more support for something than there actually is. And they do that by bringing in people from outside. In fact, one of the really interesting things when we were fighting that, we found out that they had sent out a poll to, you know, do you support removing these dams or not? And they talked about the benefits to the salmon and all the rest, and don't you want to save the salmon? And we found out that only 30% of that poll went to people that actually lived there. The rest was right. sent nationwide to places like Ohio. I know that was a big area that they pulled for some reason. Connecticut, Massachusetts, all these other places that didn't even know where the Klamath Basin was, but they were saying, yes, it's really important to save the salmon, so go ahead and pull out the dams.
Right.
So it's, again, so much of the left, because they really are a minority. You know, progressives and the true far left, they run about 20% of the population. So they have to make it look like they're much bigger and their ideas have much more support than they actually do. So I'm not surprised that you got people coming in from Canada.
Well, and to build on that, so my family owned Seneca Sawmill since 1952. So we've run into obstructionists many times. And one of the most recent is there was a protest on the bottom of a road going up to a potential logging site, and they're protesting the logging. And so, you know, you go through a NEPA process, 2, 3, 4 years. This one was 4 years in the planning. We got through all that, checked all the boxes. Okay, we're ready to go. And they decide that they're going to protest the day that we start moving our machinery up there. And one of our foresters, who was dressed normal, she was not in, you know, logging gear. She was dressed normal, jeans and a T-shirt. And she kind of mingled in with the protesters, and she ended up asking one of the protesters, you know, what are you doing here? Why are you protesting this? What's going on? Tell me about yourself. And the protester was a young woman, and she had about three other young women with her, and one guy, actually. There was another woman and a guy. And so she said, where are you from? And she said, Pennsylvania. Mm. And our forester was like, from Pennsylvania? Well, how did you get here? Why are you here? And she said, I answered an ad in a paper. They're paying us $200 a day to be here, and they pay for our hotel and our food.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
wow.
They're shipping people in from different states. And I could elaborate on more stories like that that are absolutely just, so the testimonies, if they don't think they can get enough testimony, you know, to publicly put into the record, they start asking people from other states to do it. Mm-hmm. That, you know, maybe Oregon Wild, or maybe, you know, Salmon's Forever or whatever, all these different obstructionist groups get other people from other states to write in. And you can actually go through the public testimony and see where they're from, because they're supposed to put, you know, they're, you know, where they're from, Oregon or Wisconsin or, you know, Pennsylvania, whatever. It's eye-opening. It's disturbing.
Well, and it's especially disturbing since a lot of these people are being paid by various organizations who get money from taxpayers.
100%.
Yeah, and so you've got, you know, like Oregon Wild or some of these other places that are basically paying protesters. I really wish that part of the you know, because you do have to register to be at these meetings and stuff, and you do have to say who you are and where you're from. I wish they had another column on that sign-in sheet. Are you paid to be here?
Oh, my gosh. That would be wonderful. Yeah, so the three people that showed up, the Millie the Marble Merlet and Sammy the Salmon and the Martin, they I have not seen them before. So my suspicion is that they were shifting from somewhere also. Hmm. Mostly when you show up at these things, the same obstructionists show up. So you get familiar with them. You know who they are. And so, but these three with the masks on and their full body garb and whatever, the Martin or whatever, I had not seen them before. And the woman that was the Millie, the Marble Merlet, had a slight accent, like maybe East Coast or Southern. I don't know, but she's not from here.
Well, I'm you know, again, it doesn't surprise me, but I'm trying to picture all that in my mind, and the people in costumes like that, somehow that just doesn't make you seem very serious about all of this. All right, let's go and take a break. Still lots more to talk about that June 7th meeting with Jennifer Hammaker of Henri. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking with Jennifer Hammaker, the president of ONRI. That's O-N-R-I, Oregon Natural Resources Industries, an organization dedicated to protect Oregon's natural resource industries and the people who work in them. You can find out more about them and their critical fight by heading to onri.us. That's onri.us. And Jen, just to get back to that meeting there, I guess the big question on everybody's mind is, so what now? What was the outcome of that meeting?
So we don't know what the outcome of the meeting was. There was a, you know, I am under the impression, and so are most of the people there that were opposing the HCP, that they heard us and they are hearing us. So Corvallis in March was another public board meeting for the Board of Forestry. We showed up in numbers there to oppose this. They heard us then. We had 60 kids bust in that gave testimony. And now in June 7th and Sisters, we had another, you know, as far as we're concerned, a success. We had a lot of people that showed up that gave really good testimony. They had very accurate numbers, more accurate than Oregon Department of Forestry's HCP numbers. And so we think we're making an impact. And, well, we know we are. They have moved the date to make the decision on whether to accept or reject the HCP until November. So this was supposed to be voted on and decided in September of 2022. Because we've pointed out so many inaccuracies within the HCP, they moved it back a year. And they're also, you know, back in February, they came out with some new reports that showed a 34% reduction on top of what was already being reduced. For timber harvest, timber harvest levels. And so that is what everybody is just screaming about. It's going from 260 million board feet, which is not much, off of state lands down to 165 million board feet per year annually. So that's a 34% reduction. It is absolutely devastating to counties. The counties that depend on timber harvest revenue will be destroyed. I just found in public testimony a document that was written to them, to the Board of Forestry, from what's called SDAO, which is the Special Districts Association of Oregon. There's 920 special districts in Oregon. 512 of them fall within the 15 counties that the HCP is going to impact. And within the HCP, they're required to write an EIS, which is an environmental impact statement.
Right.
That environmental impact statement has a section in there that covers socioeconomic impact. Within that, there is no mention of 512 special districts. So there again, we're going to point out another inaccuracy that they, quote unquote, forgot to include. Now, these are Oregonians that live in special taxing districts that are almost entirely dependent on property taxes and timber harvest revenue to keep their schools going, their public services going. I'm talking Vernonia, Alsea, Jewel, these little tiny, you know, townships that will be wiped off the map. So I'm so sorry. What was your original question again?
Well, you actually answered it. The original question was, you know, what now? And you said that they heard us. And I think that's really true. I mean, just the fact that they backed off from September to November, I think that is really telling.
Yes.
I think what it says more than anything is they didn't expect this level of opposition. Haven't put together the social environmental impacts, just based on our previous experience with the Klamath Dams from the attempt to close out some of the Wallala forest access. They have to include those. I mean, this is all, you know, the basics, the basic levels. And I really think that they just expected to be able to rule over people.
I do too.
I think they just thought they were just going to come in and they're going to do this and there's not going to be any opposition and we're just going to sweep things away. To not even have the most basic elements part of it. I mean, how are you supposed to accurately comment on things in a public meeting like this if they don't even have everything ready for you? Because I know that you had mentioned yesterday they still don't have that copy of the environmental impact study. So how are you supposed to comment on things when they don't even have it? It seems to me they need to move this back not just 2 months, but another year.
Yes. Yes, I absolutely agree with you. There's a lot of things they don't have in there. You know, they're projecting all these socioeconomic impacts. Well, not all these, but they've left out so much that it's like it doesn't even make sense why they're leaving this out, but they've left out so much, and they're accurate on other things. But they have... you know, when you look at the big picture of this, if it's going to be over 70 years, and your job as a ODFT forester is to create an HCP, and there's guidelines within that, you're supposed to be able to project how much devastation or how much impact it's going to have on the economy, right? Well, they don't even include inflation in this. They don't they don't include the cost of living increases. They don't include these are just raw numbers that don't make any sense when you start projecting them out 70 years.
Yeah.
So
well,
this is
just galling that they haven't had this. I know there's still other issues, too, that they haven't put forward yet. Let's go and take a break a little bit early here because I know that's going to take a bit to cover. So everyone stay with us. We'll continue with Jennifer Hammaker after this. Welcome back. We're talking today to Jennifer Hammaker. She's the president of ONRI, that's O-N-R-I, which stands for Oregon Natural Resource Industries, an organization that stands for the jobs and the people who work in Oregon natural resource industries, farming, timber, fishing, mining, all of the industries that humanity depends on and literally could not live without. And Jennifer, we were talking during the break there about how sloppy this whole HCP has been. We talked in that last segment about the fact that they didn't even have the environmental impact study, and within that, they don't have the economic impact aspects as well. You know, my producer raised another good point. I took that to mean that they really didn't feel that there's going to be any opposition. She said that, you know, maybe they ran the numbers and they know it's so ugly that they're purposely hiding it.
Correct. Yeah, I think so, because the Department of Forestry was given a job by the Board of Forestry. Who was given a job by Kate Brown? Put more conservation on our property, on our public lands, on our state lands. So ODF created an HCP. Within that HCP needs to be a socioeconomic impact statement showing the impacts to our economy. What they did not include in there was what we talked about last segment, was the inflation. They didn't include cost of living increases. They did not include, you know, they say 2 to 3 jobs per million board feet are going to be impacted when industry uses between 11 and 13 jobs per million board feet. And those are just direct jobs. Mm-hmm. Those are not indirect jobs. That's not mill jobs. That's not the scaler out there. That's not the, you know, and also the thing is that you cannot decouple timber, well, any natural resource from communities, because who lives in those communities? It's the people that work the farms. It's the people that work the ranches. It's the people that are out there working in the woods, right? So that tax base creates income tax for those counties. And unless you totally wipe out all those natural resources and wipe out that tax base, there's no way you can decouple it from the county's dependence on those natural resources. So they did not put that in the economic impact statement, the ripple effect of the HCP.
Hmm. You know, just to go back to the special districts, I've got this letter here, and I'd just like to read a little bit of it. He mentions 960 special service districts throughout Oregon who provide services ranging fire protection, health care, water, wastewater, park and recreation, irrigation, transportation, and many others. 512 of these districts are located in the 15 counties that are part of the Council of Forest Trustland counties. Most of these districts serve disadvantaged communities. 170 of them operate on a budget under $100,000. So for these special districts, even a small reduction in revenue is the difference between affording tires for trucks, purchasing needed medical supplies, or adequately staffing critical life-saving services. So that's what we're faced with here. And I know I'd asked you last time, has the state come up with any solutions as to, if they're taking these forests offline and not generating any of the revenue and the profits from those lands, how are they going to replace this funding for all of these special districts? Have you ever gotten any answers on that?
Nope. No. And there's been many letters that have been written to Tina Kotek, our governor, asking that exact question. And there has been little to no response.
Well, again, I think it just speaks to the sloppiness of all of this. You would think that would be a critical element of all of this.
It is a critical element to all of this, especially when there's these families out there trying to make ends meet and the state could give a care.
Yeah. Well, I know an awful lot of all of this is tied to climate change. That's their religion, and it's not science because it's based on models. Models is not science. Models, science is something that you hypothesize and then observe something. You can't observe models because they haven't happened yet. Observation means it has literally happened in front of you. And as far as this climate change, I know that we have said this several times here, is that if you truly believe that the forests are being impacted by climate change and that Earth is getting warmer, and it's not, in fact, NOAA just recently said the last 8 years has been cooler, not warmer. So if you truly believe that the Earth is going to heat up over the next 7 years, you should be doing more forest management, not less. Do they ever respond to that kind of projection?
No. So the thing that we're going to be proposing to the Board of Forestry immediately is that inside of the HCP, there is no plan for fire mitigation. There is no plan for emergency, to get in there and fight these fires for emergency responses, especially during these, near these townships. So they're closing down forests all around these towns and communities, but there's no mitigation for it. There's no plan to address it. And we know that going through federal agencies takes forever. And so why not integrate a plan right now, get it approved in the NEPA through the NEPA process, and have it included in the HCP that we already have a plan to address the fire danger, to mitigate the forest fires, and also some kind of emergency response plan, so that it's already okayed, so we don't have to go ask permission and wait for however long to be able to fight these fires. These little towns that are scattered within this HCP, and the communities, they're going to be losing critical funding for their fire departments, meaning they're not going to have the resources to fight these fires. And as far as I can tell, inside of the HCP, there's no mitigation for it, but inside of NEPA and inside of the ESA, the Endangered Species Act, you say that you can't have a mitigation plan. It doesn't say you can't have an emergency response plan. So why not go ahead and integrate that?
Well, again, you would think that would be part of this plan. For something that's going to take the forest offline for 70 years, this really has to be the sloppiest plan ever if they haven't included even the most basic of elements. Okay, let's go and take a break there. We'll wrap things up with Jennifer Hammaker after this. And welcome back in our final segment now with Jennifer Hammaker of ONRI, that's Oregon Natural Resources Industries, about their fight to block Oregon Department of Forestry's HCP scheme, the Habitat Conservation Plan, which is going to take over 640,000 acres offline for over 70 years. And Jennifer, during the break, we got talking, and my producer raised a good point that I think needs to be mentioned here. or at least made clear, is that the HCP is not just a plan within Oregon, but it's effectively handing control of our state forests over to the federal government.
Correct. Yes. So the Board of Forestry and the state forester have ultimate say on whether they accept or reject the HCP. It's called a draft HCP at this point, but it's an HCP. Then it goes through NOAA and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and once they accept it and they say, yep, you checked all the boxes, now they have control over our lands.
Wow. And again, can you remind us, is there a way out of this once this plan gets involved? 10 years into it, it's clearly not working. Forests are burning up more than ever. Can we then at that point say, yeah, this just isn't working, we need to divorce ourselves from this plan?
Not really. So there's right now, they're behind closed doors working on what they call an adaptive management plan. We have a board member on the Board of Forestry. Her name is Liz Agapo, and she was 35 years at the U.S. Forest Service, and she said that she's never seen an adaptive management plan work. So why they're wasting more time doing an adaptive management plan, I don't know, but it plays into our favor because we're digging up more inaccuracies within the HCP that we can point out to them, fire mitigation, emergency response, the inaccuracies in their socioeconomic reports, stuff like that. So it's you know, boding well with us to keep on, you know, putting this off, the decision to accept or reject it. However, it's absolutely ridiculous because an adaptive management plan doesn't work. And actually, in one of the meetings, Liz Agapoa asked Michael Wilson, who's the chief ODF forester, and he said, oh, sure, they work. And she said, well, can you give me any examples? And he said, no.
Well, you know, also during the break there, I got to thinking about the fact that this is a federal plan. It kind of reminds me of, or it's suspicious anyway, that this is another scheme of payments in lieu of logging. And this was welfare that was given out to these counties and whatnot from the federal government because they had effectively banned logging here in Oregon through the Northwest Forest Plan. I'm wondering if what's going through the state's mind here is why do all that sweaty, messy, hard work to harvest timber and make a few hundred million when you could just get handed $1 billion every year from the federal government? Do you think that's part of this?
I don't know for sure. It sure seems that way. Right now we have spiraling upwards costs of $111 million a year that ODF has to pay for, for fire mitigation and suppression. Hmm. Closing down 53% of the state forests.
It's going to skyrocket.
It's going to skyrocket, but it's going to reduce the revenue that ODF actually gets. So how do they expect to do this? Carla Chambers on the board said, listen, you guys, we can't afford to do this HCP, not at these timber harvest levels. We have 6% inflation. We've got 7% increase in PERS. We have a $50 million loan out there that's in a variable rate, and it keeps on going up with the interest rates going up. We have a $111 million every year and going up for fire mitigation and suppression. And she named off about four other things, and she said, we cannot afford to pass this HCP. We can't do it. We will become insolvent. We won't be able to keep the lights on.
Well, it's, you know, to listen to the impacts of what this is going to have and imagining that out 70 years from now, you don't need a fancy computer model to know that this is going to be disastrous.
Yes.
And yet you guys are up against multiple agencies, multiple bureaucracies, and that's really a prime example of how the left does battle. They've got these multiple nested bureaucracies rather than just simple, you know, straightforward rules and a straightforward process. A agency comes up with a plan, and so you fight that there, and you're able to end it. But instead, you're not fighting a plan, you're fighting the entire bureaucracy. This is ridiculously overcomplicated. As far as moving forward, though, what are the next steps here? You've got the meeting coming up in November. What needs to happen between now and then?
Well, so ONRI has a media campaign going on. We have a woman from Greenpeace that is on our side, does not believe in know, shutting down our forest.
Yep, Fairleigh Nelson.
She believes in the Fourth Amendment. Yep. We've got, yeah, she is wonderful.
She is. We've had her on. We're going to have her on again.
Excellent. We've got a 30, 40-year-old PhD in wildfire history who's screaming to the top of his lungs saying, stop, stop, stop. This HDP is going to be devastating. We've got, you know, on commercials, we have Lars Larson that came on and gave us a sound bite that we're using. And we've got these wonderful commercials out there that really pinpoint what's going on within this HDP and the impacts of it and to stop it. So it's bringing awareness. The second thing is that we have, you know, a whole team of people that are digging deep into trying to figure out more inaccuracies, more this and that, whatever, to fight this thing and bring it up to the Board of Forestry, because if it's in public comment, they can't say they didn't get it. And also, we just gained some more money from a donor.
Great.
And we're thinking about hiring a lawyer.
Good. Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's certainly another avenue that you guys need to pursue. Just real quick, only got about 20 seconds here with you. Do you still need more petitions signed?
You know what? Yeah. Anybody that wants to sign petitions, it's great. We can still enter them into public comment. We won't be presenting them. It won't make as big of an impact, but it will make an impact because it will be in public comment, and they keep track of that stuff.
Okay. Real quick, that is at OregonStrongerTogether.com, OregonStrongerTogether.com for those petitions. And do consider dropping them a donation as well. They need those funds in order to get those advertisements out. Jennifer, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Please do what you can to help Henri in their fight for you and for Oregon's natural resource industries and Oregon's forests. They need help to pay for advertising and marketing, and they need to hire an attorney or two. Henri already has one major win under its belt, pushing back that deadline just by showing up. Imagine what they could do with real financial support behind them. Help them win. Head to Henri.us, O-N-R-I.us, and go to the shop tab at the top of the page. The link to donate is under there. And if you have not signed that petition yet, head to OregonStrongerTogether.com. Quick and painless, it literally takes 30 seconds to do. OregonStrongerTogether.com. Before we go, here's a number you need to remember. 81%. 81% of the observed temperatures over the last 9,500 years were warmer than they are now. That's 4 to 5 years were warmer than they are today, going back further than civilization. The only danger posed by global warming is the scam to bleed $100 trillion out of the economy from taxpayers. It's time to end this. But it only happens when we stand up. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.